Please offer a warm Valiger welcome to Ashley.
Hi everyone, I'm Ashley, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'm a very nervous alcoholic. But I brought notes, so. Well, I'm just going to go through how it was. And when I first, while I was in rehab, somebody did actually give me some tips to keep it simple. And the three things that I kept from that were to trust God, help others, and clean house. And he actually, because we were all pretty green, he drew a triangle on the board for us and pointed out the points so that we could really remember it, and it stuck. But I'll start with how it was. I grew up in Tulare County, and I came from a great family. Nothing actually ever happened to me that I could blame my alcoholism on. I tried numerous times to create something, but nothing ever actually happened to me. At the same time, when I was in first grade, I had my first panic attack. And that continued on throughout most of my adolescence. I had extremely bad anxiety, and life just was hard for me. And I always noticed that. You know, I would look at the people around me and see them moving through life, and I would always just, I assumed that it was careless for them, that it came natural, and that something was wrong with me because it was hard for me to emotionally deal with things. Something small would happen, and it would be like I would make it into a huge ordeal. I was a very dramatic child. And after that, after being in and out of therapy, trying to figure out what was wrong with me, I just continued on. You know, I never was diagnosed with anything. It was just that I had a hard time dealing with life, obviously. And I went into high school, and I was a good kid. I didn't drink in high school. I mean, maybe I had my few nights where I drank once or twice, but it never really stuck. I was too scared to get caught for the most part. But one thing I did remember from the times I did drink was that it allowed me to be social with the people around me. It allowed me to interact with people that I typically wouldn't be able to interact with. And conveniently enough, I found a boyfriend whose family loved to drink. And so it was always around, and it was quite convenient. And it was part of being friends with them. It was just part of their culture. They drank, and so did I. And it just made life a little bit easier. It took the edge off of life. It calmed me. And, you know, I wish I could say that alcohol never did anything for me. But at that time, it was doing something for me that I could not do for myself. I graduated from high school. And after that, I got into college, and I went to a private Christian college and, you know, ended up with a party crowd there. We drank recreationally. But at the time, everybody was kind of blacking out. You know, it was like we would all black out, and then we would all call each other the next day and try to figure out what happened. And it wasn't a big deal. You know, nobody ever got hurt. There was never any repercussions for our actions. Everybody was really mellow about it. And we were in a pretty safe environment. And, you know, it was never an issue except for the next morning, I always felt guilty. I always felt shameful. And what I would later realize was that my friends, yes, they were drinking and they were blacking out. But once I started drinking, I always blacked out. There was never an option. And when there wasn't alcohol around, once I had started drinking, I would instantaneously get nervous. I would get anxious. I would be looking for that next drink. I would be the one making sure that the sober driver didn't get drunk before we got enough booze for us all to get drunk. I was a responsible one. And that's kind of how it went. You know, I hit it pretty well because everybody else was doing it. And these were, you know, your standard good college kids experimenting. What they didn't know that I was treating myself for something. I was using it as a medication to calm my nerves and to, you know, treat my anxiety. That went on for pretty much throughout my freshman and sophomore year. And when I moved home during the summer of my sophomore year, my anxiety kind of came to a head. I had a 2-week panic attack where I just couldn't move. I didn't leave the house. I would not leave my dad's side. So everywhere he went, I had to be. I was too scared to be alone, and I was too scared to be with anybody but him because he was the only one I felt like I could talk to about it. I could tell him what I was experiencing, and he would pretend to relate. And that was huge. That took a huge hit to my self-esteem, knowing that, you know, this was a real issue. I went to a doctor and finally was diagnosed with what all this anxiety was all about, and it was called over-scrupulous thinking. And it's just a form of OCD that means that my conscience is overactive. What causes that? I have no idea. But lucky me, I had it. And he said he could put me on medication, and at the time, that didn't appeal to me, and then he said, or we can meet once a week and work on this. So that's what I did, and I got tools, and I worked on it, and I calmed it, and I found a way to deal with it. It never went away. I just dealt with it. And when I went back to school, I drank, and it went away magically. I didn't have to use any of the tools that the doctor had given me. I didn't have to work. It was just like one glass of wine, and there it goes. And I remember I would go back for my weekly checkup, and the doctor would say, how often are you drinking? Here and there, you know, when there's a social event, a party. And he said, do you ever black out? No. Mm-mm. Not me. And he said, okay, well, you let me know if you think it's an issue. Why not go into that doctor? And I kept drinking because I had found something that he obviously did not know about and wasn't willing to give me. And that was alcohol. And that did it for me for many years. And I continued to drink the way I was drinking. Somehow I graduated from college. I did it on time, magically. And after that, I thought it would be a great idea to move to Hollywood. And not only to Hollywood, but I wanted to move off of Hollywood Boulevard because then I could get a cab to the bars. It would be cheap, and I would actually be saving money that way. So that's what I did. And not only did I move to Hollywood and think that was a good idea, but I also thought it would be an even better idea to try out to be the guest list girl for the clubs there because they actually brought you drinks out to the door on the sidewalk, which was convenient for me. It really eased my nerves when I was letting people through the door. And I thought that was it. I thought I had made it. I was hanging out with the in crowd. And, I mean, I was an idiot. But I really thought I was cool at the time. And, you know, I would wake up every morning so depressed. But by about 12 o'clock, I'd forget it all. And be right back at that job, working nights, staying up till who knows when, and just putting myself in dangerous situations, and never even considering that alcohol was a problem. It never even crossed my mind that I could possibly have a problem with alcohol. Nobody in my family is an alcoholic. They all are here tonight, but not because they're alcoholics. Because they're supportive, thank God. But I had never even heard of it. I had never even been to an AA meeting. I the only thing I had heard about AA was that AA was for quitters. And that was it. But I never put two and two together. I never linked the depression to the alcohol. I never linked all the chaos in my life to the fact that I was drinking every night. I never linked the fact that my car looked like it had been through a destruction derby once I had moved home to the fact that maybe I might have had a glass of wine before I drove home. I never put it all together. It never clicked. I lasted in Hollywood for 6 months. And I moved home because I woke up one morning and decided that I couldn't take it anymore. I was so depressed from the constant drinking, the constant partying, the constant being out, the late nights, the failed relationships, the whole thing. So in my head, I made an excuse because I had gotten a job offer. So that's what I told everybody. I'm moving home for the job offer. I think everybody was pretty aware that I was moving home because I just wasn't doing well there. And I got scared, you know. I was living with my best friend, and she had basically stopped talking to me, and she saw what I was doing to myself, and she didn't agree with it, and she had a day job, and I would come in at all hours of the night making noise, and I ran home, and, you know, my problems didn't follow me quickly, but slowly, and I started drinking at home. And then, you know, the same things just continued to happen. The same mistakes, the same late night out, the same problems with my job. The job offer that I moved home for, I actually got. And I'll never forget the first, within a week of going there, they decided to send me to Florida. And it was at the Marriott Hotel. And everybody was having drinks. So I thought I'd have a drink, just one. By the end of the night, I was taking shots of Patron off the bar with God knows who and being dragged up to my room by security. This is 1 week on the job, mind you. And, you know, that didn't go over so well with the owner of the company. And so, you know, he had a hard, stern talk with me. And I just let him know it wouldn't happen again, assured him. And at that point, I still didn't think I had a problem, so I was honestly reassuring him this was never going to happen again. And it didn't happen again at a work event. It continued to happen at non-related work events. And I still didn't think I had a problem. I continued to drink, and I got a serious boyfriend, and we would drink at home, just have a glass of wine, and he was quite a bit older than me, so he would go to sleep, and I would try to go to sleep too, and we were really going to sleep, and I couldn't sleep after one glass of wine. And that's when I started recognizing that I had a problem. I had to wake up and continue to drink by myself to go to sleep. And that was a hard realization for me. At that point, I knew every time I started drinking, it was going to end the same way. I actually saw the pattern. After about 4 or 5 years of the same pattern, I started recognizing it. And I decided to get sober. And my first time around, this is my second time in Alcoholics Anonymous, my first time around, I got sober out of fear. I was scared of losing things. I still had a lot to lose. You know, a lot of people didn't know. So when I told them, hey, I'm in AA, they were surprised. They had no idea. That's what they told me. And, you know, that felt good. Because that meant that I didn't maybe create as much wreckage as I thought. And I didn't take the program seriously. I worked the steps half-assed. I kind of did what my sponsor told me to do. I was extremely defiant. You know, I went to the meetings. At the beginning, I was really hot and heavy on it. I thought, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be sober for the rest of my life. And I stayed sober for 1 year and 9 months that way. And the last 9 months, I was dry as a bone, and it was miserable. I made more mistakes in those 9 months of being sober than I did in probably like the last year of my drinking. So, I mean, it did no good. And then I just thought, you know, the program doesn't work. And I ended up relapsing. And the first time around, it was really easy for me to get sober. The obsession went away immediately. And the second time around, I decided to have a Halloween party at my house. And I went out and bought drinks for everybody. I was going to be the hostess. And they had this new whipped cream vodka. And I thought, well, that'll be perfect for Halloween. Whipped cream vodka. I've never tasted that before. So everybody come. I invite numerous people. They all leave. And then I decide, I'm going to take a shot of that whipped cream vodka. But just one. I'm going to hit the sack, you know? I got to go to bed. Needless to say, there were 2 shots of whipped cream vodka and a bottle of Chardonnay later. And the next morning, I actually convinced myself that it was different this time. I said, I really didn't black out that bad. You know, it took a while to black out. And I just went to sleep. It's not like I blacked out and got in my car and got in any trouble. Nobody knows. But the obsession hit me like a rock. I mean, I had never felt it like that before. It was all I thought about. And it wasn't necessarily that I was thinking about, I wasn't drinking all the time, but I revolved my entire life around the next drink. And when something happened that was bad, it was almost like I was relieved because now I had an excuse to drink. And people would feel sorry for me. And, well, they would have drank too if they felt like I did, or they went through what I did. You know, I lost my job because I got a DUI, but I drank over it. And I did numerous things like that. I was just... The obsession over alcohol is something that is very hard to explain unless you've felt it before. It's just like it pulls you in. And every time that I would drink, I would wake up the next morning because I blacked out every single time I drank. And I would promise, you know, I would make these bargains with God. You know, I'll never do it again as I'm throwing up. This will never happen again. I love you so much. Please, have pity on me. And I would get out the big book. This was a good one. I would get out the big book to cure the hangover. Get out the big book, read maybe the first chapter, get out my Bible study, do a little bit of that, you know, clean up the wreckage of the night before, cleanse myself spiritually. By noon the next day, I was doing it again. You know, these were my attempts to correct my problems. This is my attempt to make good for what I had done the night before. I did that for 6 months I was out there. And over those 6 months, I lost myself completely. On my last drunk, I went out I didn't even attempt to get sober, like stay sober that night. Usually I was like trying to be sober and I would end up drinking. No, this time I went out to get drunk. And I woke up the next morning and I had no phone. I couldn't drive my car because my alcohol level was too high to start it because it had one of those annoying breathalyzer things in it. And so I had no phone. I had to find my phone. I tracked my phone on my computer, and it was actually at the Bob Wiley jail. And I couldn't go there because I was on probation. So I was stuck at home. And at that time, I had the only job that I probably couldn't lose unless I tried, like I did that morning, because I was working for my dad wrapping meat. And I knew that this was it. Everybody else had pretty much thrown in the towel or knew, you know, and for I woke up the next morning and I just, I don't know, I was desperate. I felt desperation like I had never felt it before. I had no way to clean up my mess. Because there was tangible evidence around Tulare County that I had drank the night before. I had no way to, I considered walking to Hanford, but I didn't think I would make it in time. Just to make good for what I had done, I was so used to doing that. I put so much energy into cleaning up my mess from the night before, and this time I didn't have the tools to do it. And I just remember, I remember that feeling of desperation. And it was like, I had lost everything, you know. Emotionally, I had no idea who I was anymore. I mean, anything anybody did, I mean, they could say something wrong to me and I would just break down emotionally. I would lose my temper in a flash. I was just, I was a time bomb waiting to go off. And that really wasn't how I wanted to perceive myself. If you asked me who I was at that time, I would tell you I'm a good Christian, I go to church, I work really hard, I'm very driven. But that didn't reflect anything about who I really was or what I really did on my spare time. And it was just a big slap in the face. And it left me feeling desperate. And I sent out a desperate email that said, you know, I'm at home. I don't know what to do, etc. And my dad came home. And he said, do you think you need to go to rehab? And that was my last drop. Because if you go to rehab, then you have a real problem. And me, I had like a moderate problem, one that could be managed by myself. So I did not want to go to rehab. And I said, here I am. I mean, my phone's in the jail. My car doesn't start. I'm just a hot mess. I'm bawling hysterically. And I'm telling him, I think we should get a professional opinion on that. So we make a quick appointment with my psychologist so that I can go out and get a second opinion if I should, you know, if I should go to rehab. I talked to him for about 5 seconds, and he said, Ashley, I can meet with you every week, and you can pay me $100 a session, but there is nothing I can do to help you anymore. You deserve to have the type of care they can provide at these type of treatment centers. I never heard that. I had never heard that I deserved it. You know, it was always, you're going to have to go to it. I had never thought of it as a gift. I had never thought that I deserved. At that point, I didn't think I deserved anything. Not another chance, not another shot, nothing. And I agreed to go. And that, you know, I agreed to go. Somebody who's been in the program for a long time came over to our house and directed us in the right direction. And I was on a plane 2 days later to Utah, and I spent 5 months there. And when I got there, I was like a blank slate. I had beat myself down so hard. You know, they asked me, tell me one thing about yourself, and I couldn't come up with one damn thing about myself. I didn't know what I liked. I had been a chameleon my entire life telling people what they wanted to hear. If you liked it, I liked it too. If you wanted to go there, I wanted to go there too. Whatever. As long as you were going to let me drink, I didn't care what I had to say. Just leave me alone. And I had to find myself there because there was no alternative. There was no getting off the hook. And, you know, I was so numb when I got there. It took me a month and a half to actually break down and cry. And, I mean, they put you through some sad stuff there. And I found myself there. But not only did I find myself, I found God there for the first time. I actually found myself having to depend on God and His strength to get me through what I thought was impossible. I thought I would never lose that craving. That craving was never going to go away. I was never going to feel like I wasn't missing out. And it was never going to feel like I wasn't part of the crowd, the cool kids, the people that could be social, could be in a social atmosphere without making a fool of themselves. I never thought that could be me. Ever. It hadn't been, actually, and I just couldn't imagine a life like that. I never thought I wasn't going to drink again. I couldn't find the strength, and I was tired, and somewhere along the line, I stopped craving alcohol while I was there, and that was such a gift. And to this day, I still feel the utmost amount of gratitude for God removing that obsession. And He removed it, not quickly, slowly, but it happened, and it was worth it, and it was work. And, you know, they say this is a program of action, and unfortunately it is. As an alcoholic, I don't like to work, I just want it now. And that's not the way it works out. And I did a lot of stuff I did not want to do. I did not want to do the steps, and I sure the hell did not want to do them 3 or 4 times like I had to while I was in rehab and moved from sponsor to sponsor. But I did. And, you know, they have those promises on the wall in a lot of these meetings. And I never really paid any attention to them because I was so focused on the here and now, what I needed to do to get better and to feel better. And I was in a meeting and somebody started reading them, and I suddenly realized that all those promises have pretty much come true in my life on their own. I no longer have any of those worldly things that I used to strive for, I used to live for. I don't have those pushing me around anymore. I don't live for my own purpose. I live to serve another purpose today. And the main word in there is serve. And I don't have to make my own decisions today. I trust the people around me. And I trust that God will guide me. And that is a huge relief. Just knowing that when all else fails, He won't. And He hasn't to this day. I have never been this happy in my entire life, and I have never known what it meant to love myself. You know, it took me a long time. I was always searching for that somebody. I was extremely codependent, and I still am. But I was always searching for that person that could fulfill me. I tried it in friends. But they would always disappoint me. I would try it in boyfriends. They would always disappoint me. I had these grandiose ideas of what somebody could do for me. And in sobriety and recovery, I found that that person has always just been me. And I just needed to become friends with myself and treat myself right and love myself and really just give myself a chance and put the work in. work on myself, do the steps. I mean, the steps are working on yourself and your relationship with your higher power. And I never did that. I was always trying to please the person next to me because what they thought of me is what I was. And today, one day it just didn't matter anymore. Today I get to live by one person's rules, one set of laws, one set of rules. And if I succeed at that on a daily basis or at least get close, then I'm doing pretty good. And they're set out pretty clearly, but the most important one, and the one that if I break, I have nothing, is don't drink no matter what. Just no matter what. That's all. I don't drink no matter what. It's just not it. I can't. Because I don't have another sobriety in me. At least I can't imagine. And I don't want to try it again. But that's the one thing that, you know, that's the one rule that every night I go to bed knowing that I didn't break. And I don't do everything on a consistent basis. I'm not a very consistent person at this time. I'm working on that. But one thing that I do on a consistent basis is every night before I go to bed, I say the third step prayer. And that's a heavy prayer to say. I mean, God, I offer myself to thee. And that alone and praying for the people around me is what has given me peace of mind and allowed me to sleep soundly every night. And that's all I have, so I will keep coming back, and thanks for letting me be a service, you guys.